Hey, it's the Blue Jays this week, kind of. Ben Ennis. Mike Wilner, we talked on the radio earlier today, and hey, let's talk on the internet. Why not? Right?
That's what the kids are doing today, so, you know, we might as well.
Yeah.
Well, we want to be hep.
Even though there's not, like, a whole lot to talk about Blue Jays-wise, because they didn't do much at the winter meetings. Kind of disappointing.
It's kind of Roy Halladay.
Yeah. That, you know what? That's a good place to start, because we didn't talk about Roy Halladay today, and I forgot we hadn't talked since that went down. Do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
I would vote for him.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes him a Hall of Famer or not, but I do think the standards are going to change as far as wins are concerned. I think
I thought he was. I used to think he was a guy that had an outside shot at 500. Obviously, we know it didn't work out that way. But I thought
500?
Him and CC. 300. Sorry, 300. Why did I say 500? Thinking home runs. But yeah, 300. I thought him and CC had a chance at 300, and it looks like neither is going to hit it.
No. You're right, it just didn't work out. I mean, but that's why there are so few 300-game winners, because it's really, really hard to do. And, for the last 20 years, every 5 years or so, there's been an article come out about how there will never be another 300-game winner. I don't believe that to be true, but I do believe that there aren't going to be a lot. And so you can't really use that as a standard for the Hall of Fame anymore. And also, you know, we're, as an analytical community, I don't want to say that because there are people who bristle at the idea of being thought of as analytical.
We shouldn't care about pitcher wins.
As a way to understand baseball and as a way to evaluate things, pitcher wins are becoming, like, even the dinosaurs are starting to see that.
Not Jack Zarencic.
They don't control. Well, we don't know. We don't know about that. There's a whole Jack Zarencic debate going on as to all of that stuff. But you know, I think that people are looking less at wins now to evaluate pitchers than they ever have before. And I think that Roy Halladay, you know, when you look at a decade of sheer dominance from 2002 to 2011, those 10 years, his numbers are throw down phenomenal, and he, you know, suffered an injury that took him from us, if you will.
Kevin Mensch?
No, not the Kevin Mensch. I mean,
did cost him a Cy Young, maybe.
It took a Cy Young, yeah, and maybe, you know, another 10 wins, sure. But I'm talking about the two broken vertebrae that cost him the last 2 years of his career and forced him to retire at 36. And, you know, we thought that he had another 5 or 6 good years left in him after 34, and it turned out he had none, and it was because of injury. So, you know, Sandy Koufax, same sort of thing. And he didn't even have a decade of dominance. I think he had just 5 years of dominance, and then the arthritis took him away. But he was a no-doubt Hall of Famer, and Roy Halladay should be, too. I don't think he will be a no-doubt Hall of Famer. But, again, if I had a vote, I would vote for him, and I think a lot of people will be feeling the same way.
I bet you I guess this is the case with a lot of dudes, but if he was eligible for the Hall of Fame, like, right now, I think he'd get in. But that's, I guess, why they have the 5-year dealio, because it seems like a lot of people put him on that same plane as Sandy Koufax. But if you just compare the numbers, I mean, he's more Curt Schilling. Like, him and Curt Schilling have very, very similar numbers, and I think Schilling's probably going to be on the outside looking in. And the counting numbers obviously aren't going to be there because he wasn't around for long enough. But his peak was better than, I don't know, anyone's peak in the last, like you said, 15 years or so.
And his peak lasted a good long time, too. And you know, we're not talking about 3 years.
And he did it in the AL East.
Yeah, and he did it in the steroid era. And there, you know, there's a lot to be said about that. So I really do think when the final tallies are tallied that he eventually winds up in the Hall of Fame. I don't, you know, it may take him 5 years, and that's a whole other silly thing, too.
So you don't agree with the 5-year thing?
No, I think it might take him 5 years after he appears on the ballot.
Right, because, he'll just keep getting,
Right, he keeps getting better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he does eventually get in.
Yeah, we'll see. Did you hear his interview on Primetime on The Fan?
Just the tail end of it.
Yeah, he actually was a lot more open and more interesting than I've ever heard him. I mean, we've both talked to him plenty of times, interviewed him after starts, and maybe no more boring guy to interview after a start than Roy Halladay. He was just, like, mind-numbing. just the not nothing that he would give you. And I wonder, hearing him in that interview, it almost sounded like he had some opinions on stuff, Mike. Maybe he maybe he ends up in the media.
I can't imagine that he would be terribly comfortable doing that. And you know, I knew him pretty well as far as a reporter with Roy Halladay relationship could be, which was never close by any means, because like you said, he had a real agenda, and his agenda was, you know, I have to do this, so I'm going to do this. Let's get it over with. I'm not going to say anything. And it wasn't, I don't think it was malicious or anything like that. It was just a part of his job that he didn't particularly enjoy. And, you know, I got him in quieter moments, and we had nice conversations. But again, it was, you know, he gave me 20 minutes once, which just completely floored me.
Really?
But it was also, you know, yeah, I understand that this is what I have to do, so let's do this, and we'll do it, and then it'll be done. And that's kind of the way it was with him. And he didn't seem to be someone who really enjoyed that kind of back and forth. I mean, he's obviously not hurting for cash, so it's not something he needs to do.
But he wants to stay in the game. It's pretty clear.
Yeah, but I would be surprised if he wound up in the media.
Yeah. It seems like he really wants to be a father as well, which is kind of a good thing to do.
Especially when you already are one.
Well, when you're a Major League Baseball player, and I know we like to justify it by saying they make bajillions of dollars, but you're gone every single day come the middle of February until, well, he played for the Blue Jays for a long time, the end of September, and then with the Phillies, middle of October.
Yeah, you know, that's why I'm sure they live in Dunedin, the Halladays. So you could have those extra 6 weeks with Brandy and the boys, and they come up in the summer and all that stuff. You know, I don't mean to, and when I say because he already is one, I mean, it's not like, hey, he wants to start a family.
Yeah.
He has a family. And I'm not saying that he was not a good father by any means, but it's part of the job. You're right. You're away a lot. And I learned that for the first time this year. And I had the benefit of having my family live in Toronto, where a lot of these guys don't.
Yeah.
And they only have their kids up when school is out for a little bit or whatever. Yeah, they make a crap load of money, all of them. Even the ones who don't make a crap load of money make a crap load of money. But it is very, very difficult being away from everybody all the time.
How many hotel mints did you get? What did you collect from hotels last year?
Soap.
Oh, soap, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have to buy soap for like another 10 years.
Ew, you like the bar soap, or is it like liquid soap? Because I don't use bar soap. That's gross.
I've gone back and forth over the course of my career, from bar to liquid and such. Right now, we are definitely in a bar mode because it is free.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. The other story we haven't got to, and we didn't get on the radio either because I forgot that we hadn't talked about it.
Hey, it's your show. I just talked about the stuff you wanted to talk about.
I know. I don't even know what I'm going to talk about 5 seconds before you come on. But
no, me neither.
Catchers.
Yeah.
Blocking the plate and stuff. People weighing in. Basically, they're just, hey, let's enforce the rule that already exists, is the way I see it.
That's true. I mean, it's very difficult for me to have a strong opinion on this because I...
You never played the game, Mike.
I was... That's not what I was going to say. In fact, the exact opposite. I was a catcher when I played, and I suffered a pretty bad injury from blocking the plate. 20 years ago, that
concussion.
Still, at the very least, a concussion.
How many concussions have you suffered? Because you've got like a bunch,
I think eight,
right?
Eight.
And this, and for people that are hearing this for the first time, a lot of stuff is going to make sense now that you know is the case. But
yeah,
that's a lot of concussions,
I've had
Mike.
Eight concussions, and I can't. You know, I used to be able to remember all of them. I can't remember all of them now.
Yeah.
Two of them were from baseball, I believe, or one. Well, I think maybe just the one was from baseball. Six were from hockey. And one was from my daughter, the first one came playing baseball, getting run over at the plate. The after effects of that single injury that I had still, it still affects me now, and it is going to for the rest of my life. So it's not pleasant.
And, really?
And so, yeah, absolutely.
Why? Oh, because your back?
Because of my neck.
Oh, it's your neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Mike has a neck/back problem. Sometimes I've seen you do post-game shows where you're actually lying on the floor in the studio here at the Fair.
Yeah, that's happened. And right now, I mean, my the neck issue flared up back in September when the Blue Jays were on the road in Minnesota. And so I've been going to, like, physio and all that stuff for the last few months.
You need to do yoga, apparently helps.
Apparently. That all comes back to that one play at the plate when I was, like, 23 years old.
Really?
And some big dude ran me over, and I was an idiot. I mean, I got him out, but is it worth it? Absolutely not. So, you know, it's not about Buster Posey, because Buster Posey screwed up, and he had his leg in a bad position, and it's his fault. If Buster Posey was standing properly, Buster Posey would not have broken his ankle. But that's what got everybody talking about it. But it's the head injuries. It's the neck.
Carlos Santana had a similar one too.
Yep, his was a knee. It's the whiplash injuries. It's those sorts of things that, you know, for me anyway, I love to see a good collision at the plate, but I understand what the effects can be. But these guys are, you know, they're big and strong, and they know what they're signing up for. But, you know, if 43-year-old me could talk to 22-year-old me, I would have said, get the hell out of the way, and either swipe tag him or
that wouldn't be the first thing you said, though.
No,
I'm sure there are other things.
It would be invest in certain things, but know when to get out.
Bitcoin.
Right. Well, Briex and RIM and Apple and all that.
Enron.
Yeah, Enron. If you know when to get out, why not?
Yeah.
But anyway, you've removed me from my train of thought now.
Talking about getting clobbered.
Pap Warders. That's what I was going to talk about. Pap Warders. I don't know how many Blue Jays fans really remember how Pap Warders blocked the plate, but there was a game in Seattle. Early on, I think, and Pat Borders always used to have this enormous plug of chew.
Oh, yeah.
In his cheek.
The greatest.
And he got run over at the plate in Seattle and swallowed it and almost choked to death on the field. And then the trainers had to come out and basically save his life right there.
Yeah.
From that point on, instead of doing the bright thing and not chewing tobacco when you were playing, Pat decided that he wasn't going to block the plate anymore. And what he did was he would swipe at guys as they went by, but leave a clear path to the plate and not get in any more collisions. And it cost him a few runs, and it didn't cost him a few runs. But you know, they still won a couple of World Series with him blocking the plate like that. There is no other position in baseball where if you have the ball, you're allowed to stand right in front of the base and dare someone to go through you. But they're also, you know, at second or third base, you know, ignoring the fact that there are very few tag plays at first, but at second or third, if you did that and the runner did plow through you, all you would have to do is walk over to him after he didn't tag him and he's out. At the plate, you can touch it and go by, and the play's over. So that's why people are that's why this play has developed the way it has. But if it's true that it's in the rules, he's not allowed to do that, then, you know, let's make sure that there's a clear path to the plate any time a player is coming through, and if he can be tagged out the same way a player is tagged out at second or third, then that's the way it should be.
I foresee, with the instant replay that's coming in this year, I see some really cool slides at the plate, which I will take 100 times out of 100 over some guys running into each other. I see guys going way outside and just getting the hand back or doing the jump over the guy's glove or whatever and touching the plate. There's going to be so much more of that stuff. There's going to be so many great slides. You know how many great slides we miss out on their awesomeness because the umpire didn't see it, called it incorrectly, that we're going to get now for real because we get instant replay?
That is a definite positive byproduct, absolutely, of the change in replay. And it's going to be great because people do get creative, and there are some awesome slides that are just too fast for umpires to see if by some amazing streak of luck they wind up in the right position to call it anyway. But yeah, replay is going to help out with that a lot.
Yeah.
Assuming it moves quickly enough. For the challenges.
Is there a possibility it's not in place for this year? I thought it was a
guarantee. No. I mean, assuming that managers will have the information to challenge quickly enough.
Oh.
Right? Because no one's going to just say, oh, I thought he looked safe, here's a challenge.
Yeah,
they're
that's why it should all be done upstairs. Them. No challenging. That's so stupid. Because then you're going to start relaying information to the dugout, and then you open a whole Pandora's box of guys stealing signs and stuff if they have access to replays and television and all of that. Because, I mean, that's the only way you can make an educated decision in the dugout as to whether or not you should challenge something.
But there's going to be a guy in a white T-shirt in the stands that'll tell them.
Honestly, I wonder if you know what the actual rules are as far as having some sort of broadcast equipment or knowing what's going on in the broadcast. Like, does a TV have to be a certain amount of space away from guys in the dugout? Because you can't just have a television in the dugout, obviously.
No, I don't know what the exact rule is. I know, though, that the Blue Jays have those short-circuit or closed-circuit televisions in the dugout to see who's warming up
the bullpen.
It's not allowed to be on anything but that.
Yeah.
But, the camera bay is arm's length from the dugout, and you can get replays from those guys in the camera bay.
That's true.
Someone sitting in the dugout can watch them. So I don't know what the rules are, what you're allowed to and not allowed to do.
That's why they should just take it out of their hands.
I didn't ever think it should have been in the players, in the manager's hands.
Yeah.
It should be every play should be looked at immediately. It'd take 10 seconds.
2 seconds,
And they can shout down or buzz down to the umpire and say, hold on, I need to take another look at this. And there you go. And hopefully it'll evolve into that at some point.
Yeah. It's going to be – I fear it's going to be a little farcical this year. But
there are going to be massive screw-ups this year.
Yeah, because that's how baseball does things. So one second baseman off the market now, Omar Infante. We talked a little bit about it on the radio today. He's not that good. I mean, he was good last year in 118
games. He's fine. He's got a chance to hit you 300, and some years he'll have a 350 on-base percentage. Not spectacular defensively. He's fine. I don't have any complaints about Omar Infante, but I certainly wouldn't. I don't want to pay him $8 million a year, and I especially don't want to pay him $8 million a year when he's 35.
Yeah, and that's the deal he got for 4 years, $30 million. With the Royals. But you look at the crop of second basemen that could be had. I mean, he's the best of the bunch. If you want to go trade for Brandon Phillips, Brandon Phillips is basically the same guy, except his career is going in reverse. He didn't have a career year. He had like his career worst year.
But he's got a little bit more pop.
Yeah, but he gets on base less.
Right, and he can't hit righties at all.
And so, he didn't hit home runs last year. What did he have, like 12 last year?
Yeah, 11, 12, 13, something like
that. No, I had 18. Never mind.
There you go. So I've always thought of Brandon Phillips as a guy who makes his living beating up on left-handed pitching. And while that's good, it's lovely, it certainly can skew your numbers. I'm gonna be old again. I was talking about Pat Borders before, and I'm going to talk about a guy named Mike Blowers. Do you remember Mike Blowers?
It sounds familiar.
He was a third baseman for the Mariners in the late 80s and early 90s. And every year, he would hit 280 with 25 home runs and 90 RBIs, and his numbers would look pretty good. But every year, it felt like, and if anybody looks these up, these numbers will be wrong. He would hit 340 against lefties with an OPS over 1,000 and more than half his home runs. And he would, you could pull 8 games out of his year, and in those 8 games total, he would have hit 11 homers and have driven in 32 runs. So, those little bits of awesomeness would completely skew his season numbers. And it's almost the same with Brandon Phillips. He does so much damage against lefties who you only see less than a third of the time that, you know, you're carrying this below-average bat against right-handed pitching, thinking that he's a key cog in your lineup, putting him in an important spot, having him bat in, you know, in an important part of the order, and not getting the production.
Yeah, and he plays in maybe the most hitter-friendly ballpark in all the major leagues.
Oh, Rogers is pretty hitter-friendly, too.
I don't know. Cincinnati and Philly are... And, well, I guess Wrigley as well, depending on where which way the wind's going. Hey, Mike Blowers.
Don't tell that to Deandre Navarro.
Why? Did he disagree with that?
Huh? What?
What do you mean? Don't tell that to him?
It kind of runs counter to the Blue Jays' philosophy in signing him. The fact that his OPS at Wrigley was 300 points better than it was on the road this year. Don't tell anybody that.
All right. Did you know Mike Blowers was born in Germany?
I did not.
Würzburg, apparently. He's 48 years old now.
I believe it's properly pronounced Würzburg.
Yeah, my mistake.
How old?
48.
All right,
so that does it for second baseman for the Blue Jays, right? Unless...
Look, you know what? If Navarro can hit, and I just said that his on-base OPS at Wrigley was 300 points higher. It's true. And he was also a creation of lefty mashing. But if he can hit decently, you can live with one all-glove dead spot in the lineup at second base. And you know, Ryan Goins' run prevention was pretty good. And even though he's not a hitter, he did have a couple of eight-game hit streaks and only played in a quarter of the season. So he's not a complete zero. He'll give you more in 2014 than J.P. Arencibia did in 2013, minus the power. But if you have a catcher, or if you have eight other spots, none of which are terrible, you can live with one, and that allows you to use Goins.
Yeah, that would be nice. I mean, there's no guarantees, and someone's going to get injured. There's nobody on this team that I expect to play 155 games, 160 games. Everybody on this team has stretches, and it's not necessarily their fault, but nobody's really all that that sturdy. And staying on the field.
They're all due. All of them do.
Really? But where's the depth? Are the Blue Jays... I mean, I guess there's not a really great way to build actual bench depth. Because if you have a good guy, you want him on the field, not on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. There are no starters on benches. There just aren't anymore. You know, this idea of having this wonderful bench where people can step in and play at an all-star level if they're called upon to start. I mean, it just isn't. Meister Sturz is a wonderful guy to have on your bench, and there are a lot of teams, if not all of them, that would love to have him on their bench. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have a backup catcher, and then with baseball the way it is right now, you have two other spots on your bench because of the ridiculosity of the 7 or 8 man bullpen. And you know, Cliff Johnson's just aren't around anymore.
Is Josh Tolley a lock to be that backup catcher?
I don't think he's a lock. But I think he's got a better chance than Eric Kratz does, especially when you look at the fact that Deandre Navarro's best side is right-handed. He's a switch hitter, and Kratz bats right, and Tolley bats left, and then you have the whole R.A. Dickey thing,
Kratz
too.
Bats.
Yes, sorry. He does. So I think Tolley is far more likely to be the backup catcher, but I don't think it's written in stone by any means.
There's still so much of the offseason to go, but you look at what the Yankees have done. They lose Cano, which stinks, but they gain Beltran. Who else did they pick up?
Brian McCann.
Yeah. I mean, that's
good.
Yeah, and that catcher position for them was that was their pitcher hitting last year. All of last year.
Yeah.
They had Chris Stewart, and yeah. I mean, that was their number one catcher. They never had anyone that could give them any offensive production from that position. They go to having one of the best offensive catchers in the game this year. Now, who knows how long he's going to be a catcher for, but definitely this year, I would say.
Yeah.
And in that ballpark, he should hit a lot of home runs. Carlos Beltran's quite good when he's healthy, a guy that's had injury problems as well. But They're looking for a second baseman, I suppose. Kelly Johnson could do well, though, if he ends up getting some starts.
Well, he could hit 35 home runs at that place.
Yeah, I know. We keep saying that. And Kelly Johnson shows moments where he's great. I thought he would be outstanding in Tampa. Didn't really work out all that well for him. He was okay at times. But you look at them, Red Sox just won the World Series. Tampa is not getting any worse, and I'm sure they're going to pull in a King's Ransom for David Price. Orioles, we keep saying, are going to regress, but I don't even know what's going on with the Orioles. But, I mean, you look at where this team stands.
It's December 14th.
I know. Okay, so say they add Garza. Do they have an elite offense? How good does this pitching staff have to be? Because the offense was just league average last year.
Yeah, but that was with everybody hurt for half the year, right?
Which all likelihood they're going to spend amount of times on the DL.
All likelihood.
Yes, if you go through their career patterns, Edwin gets hurt a lot. And I'm not saying it's their fault, okay? He gets hurt. Jose Bautista gets hurt a lot. Colby Rasmus, he gets hurt. We know Melky Cabrera is a piece of glass, and that's not his fault either. Brett Laurie, he's proven in his short career, always gets hurt. Jose Reyes gets hurt all the time. Man, I've gone through the entire position player roster.
I'll give you Reyes, because Reyes does get hurt all the time. But Edwin, not so much. And if finally, you know, his issues the last two or three years had been more of production than of health for staying in the lineup. But he played almost this, you know, he played the whole year last year.
Yeah, you know, I'll get, yeah, Edwin's pretty solid.
2 weeks into September.
He's played 130 plus games the last 3 years.
Right. So, you know, Bautista's had some injuries the last 2 years, but one was a freak swing wrist thing that's fine. And
They were all freak things with Rocco Baldelli, Mike.
Rocco Baldelli. Like, that's the guy you're going to bring up?
He had a mitochondrial disorder.
That's right. He could not get healthy at the same rate as normal humans.
He was like the reverse Wolverine.
Exactly. Or the reverse Matt Sundin, however you want to put it. But, you know, he's definitely a guy who can't stay healthy. But you know, when it's all freak injuries and when it's not a pattern of the same thing all the time, then you can anticipate. You can't plan for staying healthy, but you can anticipate that at some point in time it might happen.
What if you're a guy that plays with reckless abandon, like Brett Laurie?
But Brett Laurie at some point is going to grow up, and he grew up a little last year, and he'll grow up a little more.
Start taking walks and stuff?
I don't know about that. he did at the beginning of last season, 2012, when they asked him to, he started to, so maybe they'll just ask again and he will.
Yeah, in the minor leagues, they just ask people to take walks and they start taking walks.
That's right. But it is a little different there. But he did calm down a lot last year, and he's still only, 23? So he's got a lot of growing up and a lot of calming down to do. And at some point, he'll realize that staying in the lineup is more important than an out. And you'll remember there was a game at Yankee Stadium last year where he chased the foul ball towards that third base camera bay, and then he pulled up and shook his finger like, no, I'm not doing that again. So he is learning a little bit. No one knows. No one knows whether guys will be able to stay healthy or not, whether injuries. I mean, you anticipate that every team's going to get hurt and injuries are going to happen, but you hope that it's not going to happen at the rate that it has for the Blue Jays the last couple of years, because there's no way to plan around something like that happening. You just can't. You can't have a second starting lineup sitting and waiting for you.
That'd be nice.
For when everybody breaks down.
I don't know if this is the right way to do it either, but the Yankees always have those veterans that are kind of like hanging on at the end of their careers who have started in the past, who are way past their prime, that can step in and do stuff. Like Alfonso Soriano. I don't know if he's slated to be a starter now. But, like, he can come in and produce for you on occasion.
Yeah, and they had Lyle Overbay and Vernon Wells, and last April they were both terrific. And
where's that guy? The Blue Jays should probably pick up at least one of those guys, right?
For what?
I don't know. Like, not those actual specific people, but they should have they're going to pick up a bench bat, right?
You would think. You know, and hopefully that they'll stock Buffalo with guys who have played, you know, the Andy LaRoches of the world.
Rubio Durazo?
Is he available? I think he's still alive.
You know what? I was on a vacation in Mexico, and I saw him playing in the Mexican League. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's tremendous. Yeah, no, Rubio Durazo was terrific for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of steroid era.
Yeah, weird how that works, eh?
But no, it would be nice if they, and they tried to last year. They had a bunch of guys in Buffalo, and maybe they'll even sign Lunanori Kawasaki again.
Is Mauro Gomez still on the line? Is he still on the minor league roster?
Mauro Gomez.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. Well, I mean, there's still so much time to go. It is.
But if they are healthy, it is an elite offense. I mean, you look at Reyes, Cabrera, Bautista, Encarnacion, Lind, Rasmus, and then your bottom three, if Rasmus probably hits seventh in your perfect world, Lori would hit behind Lind, and then Rasmus hits seventh, and then you've got Navarro and whoever's playing second base hitting eighth and ninth, and that is a really, really good offense. So, cool. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, you can't.
Do you want
survive.
Colby hitting that low? That guy's an on-base machine.
Fifth?
He's an on-base machine. I'd put him
not
second.
As much as Adam Lind is. Righties.
Yeah. Where you had Adam Lind hitting second?
Fifth.
Oh. Well, I'd have... who'd you have hitting second?
Melky, because that seems to be the way they want
horrible.
To do it.
Horrible. Colby should be hitting second.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think Jose Bautista should be hitting second.
Well,
yes. I love
that was great. He hated that, though, because...
He did, and he's wrong.
I know he's wrong. Everybody knows he's wrong.
He's wrong.
He should be leading off.
Yeah, well, no, because you want him coming up with having an opportunity to come up with something.
It's only once,
every
though.
Time. Every time he comes to the plate, you want him to have an opportunity to come up with something.
Yeah, but you're only guaranteed that it's once.
You're never guaranteed it.
What do you, well, you, know, you get that he gets a chance,
one.
Yeah.
Right, but you never want to deny that possibility of the opportunity, so you don't lead him off. But look, it's funny, and I don't know how true it is, because I don't remember any public complaints from him about hitting second. And
I do.
The story was...
He said, yeah, it's like, I'd rather be hitting third, but yeah, I understand, like, this is... Yeah, I'm pretty sure he said that.
They always rather be hitting third because that's like the power spot or whatever. The best hitter is supposed to bat third.
Yeah.
But that's changing, one hopes. And you know, I'm going to do my best all spring to beat it into Gibby and Bautista that he should be hitting second. I think I talked to John Gibbons about it when they made the switch and the switch back, and we kind of went back and forth. And I ran the numbers, and the numbers showed that Bautista not only – he thought hitting third you get more chances to drive in runs, and he's a run producer, and that's what he should be doing. But the truth of the matter is, he didn't hit as well batting second as he did batting third. The OPS was significantly lower, but he drove in more runs per game batting second. He had more chances, and he drove in more runs. And so if he was comfortable with it, he could be even better, and it would make the offense go that much more. The problem is that you're left with, like, Brett Lorre hitting fifth, which is not ideal, but you get your best bats up more often, and you don't have to go through, well, I guess maybe Melky could hit fifth, but you don't have to go through a week or two hitter to get to your big guys, and that's definitely a benefit. So, if we're talking about ideal lineup construction, then Jose Bautista is my two hitter and not Melky and not Rasmus.
Going through Baseball Reference has all this stuff positioned in
Colby
the lineup.
Strikes out a little too much to hit two.
Yeah,
for me.
He's going to work on that. Apparently, his dad's a great follow on Twitter to get all your Rasmus information. Do you follow him?
I do.
He's going to steal some bases. This year. He stole zero, which was shocking to me to go back last season. He didn't steal a single base. This is a guy with some speed. Stole 12 in 2010, but he stole zero last year. He was only caught once. And maybe that was a pickoff.
It was early in the season. No, it was, I think it was in May.
And he was like, screw this.
Yeah, he didn't try anymore. Might even have been April.
He had an outstanding season, Mike, offensively. Colby Rasmus. He had an .840 OPS. Slugged over 500 and on base of .338. Struck out a ton. I understand that. Had 135 strikeouts. But that is a great, great...
It's not a great, great season.
It's a great... If you're playing above average defense in center field?
Yeah, but it doesn't get you in the middle of the lineup.
No, but you should be higher than 7th.
If .338 on base doesn't put you in the top 5, or at least it shouldn't.
Compared to Brett Lorre's .310?
Brett Laurie shouldn't be a top five either.
Compared to Melky Cabrera's 310?
Melky Cabrera was playing with a cancerous tumor in his back. Sorry, it was not cancer.
No, it was not cancerous.
He was
benign.
Playing with a tumor. You should, you know, Melky gets a...
He doesn't take walks, though. Even when he's healthy, though, he doesn't take walks.
No, he doesn't.
So? This guy can take it. He can take a pitch or two.
Yeah, but I mean, look, 330 on base is barely above average.
338. No, Mike, you're living in the past. I bet you the league average on base is about 305, 310 now.
Yeah?
Yes, I guarantee you.
I bet you it's over 320. I'll find it right now.
Where can you find it? I bet you the league average on base is just barely over 300.
Still things that I know that you don't know.
I don't know. I disagree. Anyways, while you're looking that up, maybe you can think about this, too, because Colby is a free agent after this year.
Yes, he is.
And there's been, you know, some rumors about Blue Jays not shopping him, but he's been part of trade discussions. I'm sure everybody's been talked about.
Average on base percentage in the major leagues, in the American League in 2013, was 320. In the National League, it was 315. The overall average was 317, which is about 10 points lower than I thought. It's true, but
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, see, it's not that great.
Oh, you said barely over 300.
All right, so it's 17 points over. I guess 305.
Right, 320 in the American League. So 338 is not even 10% above the average.
Yeah, but it's real nice when you slug 501.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. Absolutely. But that's more of a middle-bottom hitter, not a top-of-the-order, you know, table-set type who strikes out a lot. And I think Colby's got a lot more in him. I think Colby could get that on base up to 360 or 370, like he did his last full year in St. Louis. But he doesn't hit two, not with those numbers.
So what was I saying? Yeah, he's a free agent after next season. You can wait a little bit, but I think even if he just stays at that level, he's a guy you want to keep in your organization, don't you?
Paying him twice as much as you're paying him now?
What is he making now?
I think he'll make 7 or 8 this year.
Yeah. I don't know.
Curtis Granderson got 15, didn't he?
He hits lefties better than Curtis Granderson.
Uh-huh. Do you want to pay Colby Rasmus $15 or $16 million a year is the question I'm asking.
Over how long?
I don't know. 4 or 5 years? He may get a 7-year deal if he has another one like this.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that for 7
right.
years.
Exactly. So,
What are your options then? He plays center field. You're not going to go with Anthony Gose for the foreseeable future in center field unless he takes a huge step forward. And Shai Davidi had a great story, actually, on Sportsnet.ca about the Blue Jays' lack of outfield depth beyond who they have right now. And Melky's done after this year. And Jose, how many years are left on that? 3? 2?
Yeah, and how many of those are going to be an outfielder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who the Blue Jays have? DJ Davis is about a million years away.
Outfielders are easy to find.
Oh, are they?
They are. Sure they are. That's the easiest position to fill is the first.
Oh, one just walked
outfield.
Into the studio here. Oh,
see? There you go. But it is. It is the easiest position to fill.
And you're probably better off playing. You're better off paying your own players than going outside and giving up that kind of cash.
What?
I don't know. That's just something people say.
I know, there's no validity to it at all. I think that it depends on how Colby does this year. It depends on, you know, like 2 years ago, Edwin Encarnacion was going into his free agent year, and the Blue Jays managed to sign him up long term at the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a viable option for them again this year, and they can sit and wait on Colby. He's not going anywhere, so. I don't know that there's any urgency to lock him up at this point.
But you agree he's good and stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, I've always. Remember, there were years when I was the only one who thought he was good.
Nah, I was always on that boat.
That was good.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how good a season he had last year. Because they look at all the strikeouts.
I don't think they do, yeah. But he's very good. He's not elite offensively. And again, he shouldn't be hitting in the top five in anybody's lineup, but he's awful close.
We'll wrap it up soon, but I want to talk about free agent pitchers, because Blue Jays, there's just one guy they like to pick up via free agency, and he throws the baseball. His name is Tomooka, because he's the last two free agent pitchers they've picked up have both been Tomooka. What's up with that?
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I actually dig this. He's a knuckleballer now, and put him in Double A and see what happens.
Oh yeah, how can you not love that? But it is kind of, I don't know if it's sad, but it's this team does not go after free agent pitchers. So anybody waiting on them to make a big offer for Irvin Santana or Matt Garza, maybe not.
Well, this team doesn't like giving starting pitchers contracts longer than 5 years. So
yeah, how many times they made the playoffs in the last 20 years?
Yeah, and you know, this is the thing you have to balance, and you have to. You still have an obligation to be smart. You really do, and I understand that the big splash.
Yeah,
by the
way, they
signed Josh Banks too.
What?
Josh Banks, who's also a knuckleballer now.
Hold on, he used to be with this organization, right?
Yeah.
And then he went to San Diego, right?
Right, and then I think he went overseas. And
Josh Banks.
Coming back on a minor league deal.
Shut up.
He's a knuckleballer now.
No.
And they're trying to add minor league knuckleballers to teach their catchers how to catch them on the way
up. Josh Banks.
I love it.
What a blast from the past, Josh Banks. Did they get anything from the Padres for him, or did he
I think that was a trade. No. Maybe not.
No. Selected off waivers.
Oh, well.
Josh.
But anyway, it wouldn't surprise me if they dipped their toe in the Garza Jimenez Santana waters at some point after Tanaka after his situation is resolved.
Will
open up a little bit.
Do they blow their brains out for Tanaka if he's posted?
No, they're not going to blow their brains out for anybody. It's just not what they do.
Well, you're going to have to for Tanaka. And then they're not getting Tanaka.
Yeah.
Because he's a potential ace. The other guys we're talking about aren't potential aces. Maybe you can make the argument that Garza could be.
Maybe not. Garza could be. Jimenez has been. Santana never has been.
Mm-hmm. And Jimenez, that was a totally different pitcher than he is now. He's not that guy anymore.
And
he's figured it out when it looked like maybe he had lost it, but he's not throwing 99 and you can't even see the ball anymore.
No, this is true.
Yeah, so you're saying bad times on the free agent pitching watch for Blue Jays fans or what?
I think that they're likely to be disappointed, yeah, but I wouldn't put it past them to get in on one of those guys once Tanaka signs, the market will open up a little bit, and guys will start to do things, and then we'll see.
Well, if they're not going to blow their brains out for Tanaka, you would almost it'd be better for him to post, because if he doesn't post, that just throws another big player into the mix for the rest of the guys.
It'd be better for him to not be posted.
No, it would be better for the Blue Jays, even if they're not going to be involved on Tanaka, for him to post, unless, of course, he goes to the Yankees or something.
What do you mean when you say for him to post? What does that mean?
For him to be posted.
Oh, right. Okay. He's going to be posted. I'm confident, at least, that he's going to be posted.
Really? Because I've heard it's...
I'm hearing the whispers, too, but it's the smartest thing to do is to take the money.
No, the smartest thing to do is to get him to pitch another year and get the money next year anyways, because it's going to be the same amount.
Why not get it now then?
Because you get another year of him, and you get $20 million anyways.
Oh, well, I guess for the Golden Eagles, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, why would they post him?
Why post him at all then? You get $20 million
because he has.
I think he has.
Well, yeah, when is his contract up? He'll be a free agent at the end of his contract.
I don't know how.
Because you got to get. You want to get your $20 million. Anyways, who knows? We're both kind of talking out of our rear ends on that because I don't really know.
But a little bit.
Just what I've heard. All right, that's cool. Anything else you want to add? What are your plans today? Doing stuff?
Yeah, stuff.
All right. This was fun. Do it again maybe next week. Maybe there'll be a little more to talk about Blue Jays-wise next week, and we can do it again.
Oh, you think there'll be a little bit more? I don't know if there'll be a little bit
more. We didn't even mention international cap space, man, they picked up. People are going to be walking around. I made this joke already on the radio, but I'll make it again. People walking around with little jerseys with international cap space on the back next year.
I think they had the made another trade last year or earlier this year that got them some international cap space too. It's not the first time they've done it, but it's great. You know what? It cost them nothing.
And they get international cap space.
Yeah. And look at some of the players who have been signed internationally and how much of an effect that they've had. Well, there didn't used to be a cap.
Yeah, but now
there is.
You get.
You need the space.
From the internet. I mean,
I don't know
international.
Why you're, I mean, I guess this is funny to you. I think it's
no, it's good. I got 200 grand of international cap space. It just seems like the most, I don't know, the weirdest thing. Because you know, when you think of baseball, you don't think of a cap space. But here they are, international cap space.
You know, just wait till Roberto Osuna comes up in the major leagues, and that
yes.
dude was signed with international cap.
And the shortstop, who's supposed to be good too. What's his name? Oh, I forget his name.
The one that they have already?
Yeah.
That?
Yeah. Oh, I forget his name. Oh, come on. Barreto. Franklin Barreto, right? Are you there? Or are you thinking?
Barreto. Yeah, I'm thinking.
It's Franklin Barreto.
All right, fine.
You don't know
that? There was Wilmer Becerra, but they traded him.
Oh, no.
And not for international cap.
Before we go, I'm going to just double check Franklin Barreto. Yeah. Yeah, he played. Yeah. He's 17. Yep.
We're waiting for a while for him.
Yep. All right. That'll pretty much do it. He's Mike Wilner. You can follow him on Twitter at Wilnerness590. Follow me on Twitter as well at BennisSNet. You can follow the podcast as well at Jays This Week. We'll see you sometime.